Vignette number 85 from Zen is right here. Teaching stories and anecdotes of Shunju Suzuki. During a discussion, someone asked Suzuki Roshi if he ate meat. "Yes, I do," he replied. "Buddha didn't eat any meat," came the response from the questioner. "Yes, Buddha was a very pious man," Suzuki said. That's from Stan White, Sokoji, circa 1965. Well, the questioner is wrong. Buddha was not a vegetarian. Buddha ate what he was given in his begging bowl. They were mainly vegetarian. But, you know, one of the stories of how Buddha died was being given some bad meat that he ate. And, of course, knowing it was going to be bad and kill him. But, you know, that's the story. Anyway, how Buddha is portrayed, Shakyamuni Buddha is portrayed in the writings is as someone who not only would eat meat if it was served, it was part of his teaching, but, you know, you were supposed to be removed from the killing, and it was just if you were given it. And mainly they were vegetarian. You know, I don't know exactly what their rules were on all that. Tell you what, I'll look it up. Okay, from steamit.com. It's a food site. But it looks like they've done their homework. So I'm going to go on and read it. "The idea that Buddha taught strict vegetarianism in his day does not reflect the original Buddhist teachings. The Buddha did have rules for monks about meat eating, but he did not adopt the strict no meat eating that was associated with Jainism in his day. Furthermore, he shows in the teachings that there are more important defilements and unwholesome states of the mind to deal with. In the Amaganda Sutta, in the Sutta Nipata, verses 239 to 252, Bhikkhu Bodhi, the famous translator, states that the theme of the discourse is meat eating, which testifies to a type of criticism that Gautama himself faced during his lifetime. The Buddha did not make vegetarianism compulsory, but permitted his monastic disciples to consume meat on occasion that the animal was not killed specifically for them. The allowance to eat meat is pure in three respects in the Buddhist teaching. The details of this can be found, and they give numbers. In three cases, Jivaka, I say that meat may be eaten when it has not been seen, heard, or suspected that the animal was killed for oneself. This shows that the Buddha does not require the monks to observe a strict vegetarian diet. It permits them to consume meat when they know that the animal has not been slaughtered, especially to provide them with food. Such meat is called tikotiparisuda, pure in three aspects, because it is not seen, heard, or suspected to have come from an animal killed specifically for the monk. There is also textual evidence that the Buddha himself ate meat. This custom provoked a sharp criticism from other quarters, particularly the Jains, who insisted on strict vegetarianism." Okay, So, wow, they just keep going. That's interesting, huh? I know Monet, my monk friend here, always says it, but Monet is very strict. Vegan and has been one for 50 years or something like that. You can listen to his podcast. Anyway, Suzuki, you know, insisted we have vegetarian food at Taj Sahara. And we did. And when Bill Kwong had been running the kitchen at Sokoji, where Suzuki lived, you know, had lived since he arrived in 59, Bill Kwong ran the kitchen there just for Saturday morning breakfast, when everybody was there to eat Saturday morning breakfast as part of the Saturday morning program. And Bill would put dashi no moto in the soup. And dashi no moto has fish stock in it. And Mrs. Suzuki would make dishes that had a little bit of meat in them. You know, not like a big meat thing like, you know, you see in Western restaurants. Just some little bit of meat or something in a stir fry or whatever, or however she did it. And when he was out, he would just eat whatever off whatever was on the menu. I mean, many, many of his students were much stricter than he was. When Alan Winter tells the story of when Suzuki first came to Taj Sahara, when the Becks owned it, Jim Cook, who was the cook, made a macrobiotic meal for him, and everybody else had hamburgers. And Alan says that he pushed it aside with a sneer or something. Anyway, he pushed it aside and said, "I like hamburger," and took a hamburger because there were some in the center. So one reason he would sometimes he would make a point of that. There were other stories, such as the well-known one where Bob Watkins had been a vegan for 2 years, hadn't had any animal food, and he had to take Suzuki into town because Suzuki crushed his finger and doing some stone work. And then Suzuki was on the way out after the doctor said, "Let's eat." And Bob told me, you know, he looked around and there wasn't any place suitable. And Roshi immediately ducked into a restaurant that, you know, just had hamburgers and stuff. And he said there was nothing on the menu that he could get that didn't have animal food. So the best he could do was a grilled cheese sandwich. And Suzuki said to him, you haven't eaten meat in a long time, right? He said, "Yes, Roshi, I haven't eaten meat or any animal food in 2 years. And Roshi said, "Oh, that's very good practice." So Suzuki ordered a hamburger with double meat. And when it arrived, and Bob's arrived, they each took a little bite, and Suzuki asked Bob, he said, "How do you like your cheese, grilled cheese sandwich?" He said, "Oh, it's good." And Suzuki said, "Well, I don't like my hamburger." And then he picked up Bob's grilled cheese sandwich and his hamburger and he switched them. And he said, "Here, you eat this, I'll eat this." And Bob told me this story in Studio City in 1969. That happened in 67. In 1969, he'd worked for Dennis Hopper a lot, and he was down there working with the movie business. He told me that story over a lamb stew. So, you know, Suzuki would even say, you know, "We've got to kill vegetables." Personally, I like what Buddha said. You can't equate vegetables with meat. Buddha said, The bigger the animal, the worse it is, you know. What I would say is, I think the way I look at it is, the closer the form of life, the animal is to human, the worse it is to eat it. So the worst thing to eat then would be primates. And then you can go down saying eliminate mammals. And then you can eliminate vertebrates. I remember George Osawa, who started the macrobiotic thing. He said, you shouldn't eat any food that'll run from you. So he'd eat, you know, oysters. Then there's the Jains. All right, that's going down there. And then there's, you know, people who say, you know, no animal food because, you know, if you drink milk, you know, they have to kill calves for you to have the milk. Then there's people who say, well, you shouldn't eat white sugar because bones are used to making white sugar. Now, I don't know if that's true for all white sugar. But then there's people that say, like the Jains, they mentioned, the Jains really basically just one thought the only food that should be eaten, food that should be eaten is like fruit that falls from trees. And they walk around with staffs with jingled, naked Jains that jingled to scare the little critters away from the ground so they wouldn't step on. And they'd filter their water through cloth so as not to get any little tiny things in the water. So I think it's good to be aware of all that stuff. And, you know, before we eat at Tassar and this Endo, there's a chant. 72 labors brought us this rice. We should know how it comes to us. And that means to be aware of what one is eating. You know, like in that chant, it says, be thankful for this food and, you know, be aware of suffering of other forms of life. To be grateful for all the work that went into it and to be aware of the suffering that went into it. Doesn't mean we have to, you know, stress over it or have any particular emotion over it. Just be aware of what we're doing. We are animals, and animals really have to kill to live. Killing is part of what we do. But then, you know, we shouldn't, or I think one, it would be not right for one then to start, you know, making excuses and just doing anything you want, saying, well, you got to kill anyway. You know, we do our best, right? And as the saying goes, do as little harm as possible. This has been a Cuke Audio mini podcast, sort of stretching the limits of the mini here. I'm D.C. Pubov, Cuke Audio and Cuke Archives, coming to you from Sleepy Sanur with Doggett Bandita, Feline Cuchita, and dear lovely Katrinka, who just told me my bath is ready because we have a Japanese bathtub even here in the tropics. And we're wishing you and yours and all of us a grand awakening.